What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 74. This is going to be part two of our series of therapeutic properties of the ketogenic diet. We're going to be talking about the NADH to NAD ratio. And I'm sure already people tuned out. I know it's going to be a little complicated, but just bear with us. Tom's going to break it down and make it as simple as possible. But this stuff is really fascinating to me, and I hopefully you guys like it. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
This has been a great week. So, last week, I did a five-day fast. Well, like 4 days and like 18 hours, something like that.
Close enough.
Yeah, close enough. By far, the easiest fast I've ever done. I could have done at least another day or two, but that Friday was my fiance's birthday, so we went out to dinner. So, I had to make sure I broke the fast at home before we went out to eat.
Just in case.
You know, because we went out for Korean barbecue.
Oh, okay.
Which is probably the only type of restaurant I'm going to go out to eat at now. It was, I think, like 25 bucks a person. All you can eat, meat. So, we went through. So, there's a table of six next to us.
Uh-huh.
We for sure all ate them.
Good.
There's, like, another couple next to us. We probably out ate, like, all eight of them between the two of us. And it was mostly just meat.
Of course.
So they do like shredded ribeye. It has some sort of seasoning on it, but I was like, every time you come here, bring some of that. So I went through at least 2 pounds of that shredded ribeye. Delicious. Tried pretty much everything else that was on the menu. Just like went through all that. Man, it was so good. Like
that's cool.
Yeah. I broke my fast with a thing of bone broth and some like bacon and eggs earlier that day. Something that I eat all the time. And then I went out for that. Like, yeah. I wouldn't do a five-day fast straight going into that. Like, that's not the best idea.
Yeah, maybe not. You'd maybe run to the bathroom pretty quick.
Yeah, maybe a 2 or 3 day, but not a
five-day. Yeah. No, I've actually never been to a Korean barbecue place. So people tell me it wouldn't be good for me because the slices are too thin.
Well, that's the beauty of it. They're thin, so they cook fast.
Okay.
So, like, you can order, like, a steak. But then you have to sit there and wait for your steak to cook. Or you can get this, like, shredded thin ribeye. Mm-hmm. You toss it on the grill. You flip it over. Okay, it's done. It takes, like, a minute, 2 minutes.
Okay.
You can even get, like, there's even thinner. I think it was, like, beef shank or some other cut of steak. Like, you can get that's, like, paper thin that just cooks instantly. Like, you want that small stuff because it cooks fast.
Okay. Yeah, no, I'm totally down to go to a Korean barbecue place for sure.
Yeah, and most of them, if they're like an all-you-can-eat type of place, they give you like a time limit. So you're like, it's all-you-can-eat within like an hour and a half.
Oh, that's how they do it?
Yeah, it's not like you can just sit there for 3 hours, 4 hours long. Like,
yeah.
So it's all-you-can-eat. So you want something fast.
Okay, no, that's cool.
Yeah, so yeah, that was perfect for us. Outside of that, I'm like increasing my training. I'm going to do a 50K sometime in February. I've narrowed it down to like 3 different ones. I just kind of need to... There's a lot of events in February that I make sure, like, I don't want to run a 50K the same day as the Super Bowl. Like, there's Valentine's Day somewhere on there, too. So, I'm, like, trying to figure out what me and my fiance are going to be doing.
Yeah.
So, I'm, you know, trying to decide. So, I went up to Mount Diablo Monday. And I was like, all right, I'm going to run from the bottom to the top. Last time I did that, it was, like, end of August. It was a 50K race. Kicked my ass. Like, so it was really hard. So, the weather in the Bay Area has been really weird. So, it's nice and sunny in the parking lot. So, I'm like, okay, I got this. Shorts, t-shirt. I'll do this run. So, the run is really simple. It's just pretty much just straight uphill. Once I get, like, towards the top, like, I've only been there a few times. So, I don't know all the different splits and everything. So, my idea is I'll just look to the top. And whatever trails go to the top.
Take that trail.
That's where I'll go. So, I'm about, like, probably, like, 5 or 6 miles into my run. And then I get, like, I'm pretty high up there. I'm at least, like, 2,000 feet higher than where I started. Well, it's really foggy where I'm at now, and I can't see up 84.
Oh, wow.
So I'm just like, I can't see 100 feet in front of me on these trails. So I'm just like, I don't know.
You can't see the top, so where are you going
to
go?
Yeah, I don't know how close I am to the top, but I also know that there's like a parking lot and campgrounds about a mile away from the top, and I haven't hit that yet. So I'm like, okay, I'm probably made a wrong turn somewhere. So I'm like, all right, you know, whatever. It was at least 5 miles. I'm like, 5 miles uphill, 5 miles downhill. It was a pretty solid workout.
For sure.
So I just ended at that instead of getting lost in the fog.
Yes.
I thought that was a better idea, especially because I left my cell phone in the car because my battery was low. And I didn't have headphones, so I thought my cell phone was just worthless. So I was like, yeah, let me just do it this way.
Smart.
So next, I'll do it again this next week, go back to the same thing and like make sure I do the right trails.
Yeah, map it out.
Yeah, it's still a tough workout, but it was my really first time testing out my new trail shoes. Oh my God, such a difference maker.
Really?
Not so much on the uphill, it doesn't matter, but the downhill.
Because last time you were like sliding down the hill.
Yeah, I just had like normal like Nike running shoes, like basic ass running shoes. Like they don't have the bottom of these shoes looks so much different. They have so much more surface area. Like they're really made to like grip the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And I flew down. It took me like an hour 15 to get up to where I got. It took me it was like 40 minutes on the way back down.
Yeah, and you expended like way less energy because you didn't have to catch yourself constantly.
No, it was basically like my shoes had all the grip, so I wasn't like really digging in with anything like that. So it was just basically just like, oh, just fly downhill.
That's cool.
I don't know if it was all the shoes or just I've been doing this longer. So, I mean, it's probably a combination of the two. Did that. The following day, I followed it up with another 10-mile run. So the way I do it, like my local 10-mile runs, like these are my easier flat runs.
Mm-hmm.
I did 3.5 miles with my dogs. I don't really want to take them out too much longer than that because I don't know how well they'll be able to do. I mean, they're little.
They're tiny.
Yeah, I don't know if they can really keep up with me for a 10-mile run. So I did 3.5 miles with them, drop them off at the house, then go back out and did another 7. And I was shocked with how fast I did that. It was under 2 hours with me. That's including me walking the first like half mile with my dogs so they can like stop, go to the bathroom. Me having to stop every now and then for traffic lights, them to use the bathroom, and then also taking them back upstairs. I mean, there's probably a good like 15, 20 minutes where I was like either just walking or just not moving, just either due to the dogs or just like traffic lights. And I wasn't even really pushing myself. It was just supposed to be like a nice, like slow, easy pace. Like I wasn't even that tired. I probably could have done another 5 or 10, like no problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I'm in pretty good shape, a lot better shape than I thought I was in.
Yeah.
So I'm like really looking forward to this next 50K to see how it goes.
Yeah, crush it.
Yeah. I really didn't think I was in that good of shape because I haven't done too many runs more than 10 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But this last one was just so easy and so much faster and following like a really tough workout. Like my legs were really sore when I did that, like that second 10, mm-hmm. just from doing that 5 miles uphill, 5 miles downhill.
Yeah.
Like that kills your quads and stuff. Yeah. But I don't know. Didn't really make any difference in my body.
That's cool.
Yeah, so I can't wait for this next 50K.
No, that's cool, man. No, I think you're going to crush it. I really do. I want to touch on something real quick. You were talking about how the fast went really good.
Yeah.
You know? So there's one of our clients, this was a while ago, like a year ago, she was having a hard time fasting, but like, and you know, that's, for some people, it's harder than others. You know what I mean? And for whatever reason, it seems like women have a harder time with extended fasts. But I found an article recently talking about, she was on a statin as well, how statins block the production of ketones.
Oh, okay.
Makes total sense. And it's not a complete blockage, but it definitely diminishes it.
Yeah.
And why she was having a hard time fasting.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely do it.
That's what makes fasting, or it's one of the aspects that makes fasting easy, is when your body has all these extra ketones, it has all this extra energy. And so, you know, you feel good when you fast, and she never did. Like, she never got in a groove with fasting, and I was like, man, sorry, like, that sucks, but now I know why.
Yeah, that would do it. And just talking about the ketone production, like, I mean, if you've never done a fast, you would think it gets harder every single day, but that's not true. Like, the first day, for me, is always the hardest. For some people, it's the second day. But, like, the third day onward, like, it's so easy.
You're cruising.
And honestly, like, your ketone production is crazy high. So, I mean, like, yeah, if you don't get to that point, then yeah, you're gonna struggle.
You're gonna be stuck in that like hard phase the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Wow. I didn't really realize that.
But. Yeah. No, me either. I mean, it makes sense when you understand the pathway of cholesterol, you understand the pathway of ketones, but for whatever reason, I never made that connection.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Okay. We should have, right? If you think about it. I know. Yeah. But whatever. But okay. Yeah. So let's get into this topic today. So This is, if you don't know, we're doing a whole series on the keto diet. And honestly, I almost wanted to call this Benefits of the Carnivore Diet as well, since the carnivore diet is ketogenic as well. But whatever, keto is kind of a buzzword. So you know what I'm saying? I'm just saying keto for therapeutics. And a lot of people start the keto diet initially to lose weight, but when they go keto, a lot of the ailments that they've had forever tend to go away. And it's great for autoimmune issues like ulcerative colitis or any sort of GI issues, but also things like diabetes, which in the normal like medical world, diabetes is chronic. Diabetes is something you'll have your entire life. You know, it's what a doctor would tell you when you get diagnosed, but that's 100% not true. It is reversible. And the ketogenic diet is one of the ways that can happen. So there's a lot of different aspects of the keto diet that is therapeutic. So that's why I'm breaking it down this whole series to individual parts. Because I talked about all of it in one podcast, it would be like a 5-hour podcast. So one of the things that comes up in the keto world is something called the NADH to NAD ratio. And honestly, usually in these posts or articles, or even when people mention on podcasts, that's all they say. They say, oh, the ketogenic diet is good for your NADH to NAD ratio. And then they kind of, the co-host says, okay, yeah, cool. Then they move on. But no one really ever talks about what that means. Like, why is that beneficial? So I wanted to really let people know what it's about. And it is, we're going to be talking about genes and we're talking about cofactors and stuff like that. So it is kind of complicated, but I'll try and make it as smooth as possible.
But yeah, we're talking about all this down at the cellular level. This is some like microscopic shit that we're talking about today.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's important, man. And it's really interesting and, or, you know, at least to me. And I think it does just shine light on all the many beneficial aspects of keto. Like, it's crazy how many benefits there are, and this is one of the bigger ones, and it's not talked about enough in my opinion. So first I just want to break down what is NAD and what is NADH. So NAD stands for nicotine amide adenine dinucleotide, and it's a coenzyme found in all living cells. It's vital to cellular metabolism and hundreds of other biological processes. And NADH is just the reduced form of NAD. And for all my OChem nerds out there, you remember the, what are these called? Mnemonics? Leo the Lion Goes Grr? What is that called? Where it's like a...
Yeah, mnemonics.
That's what it's called, mnemonics, yeah. So we're taught a mnemonic called Leo the Lion Goes Grr. So Leo, L-E-O, so you lose an electron, that's oxidation. And Grr, G-E-R, you gain an electron, that's reduction. So when NAD gains an electron, it turns into NADH. So kind of through redox reaction, it bounces back and forth between NAD and NADH. And so these are coenzymes in reaction. So they allow reactions to occur. And I know a lot of people hear the term coenzyme and that just kind of, you know, their eyes glaze over. Like, I don't know what that is. But you do know what that is. So you've heard of vitamins and minerals?
Yes.
So why don't you describe vitamins and minerals, coenzymes, and enzymes? Like, you're good with that. Like, remember the coral reef example?
Well, so enzymes just kind of speed up all the reactions. Like, reactions will take place in our body kind of regardless. But if you want them to happen fast and you want, like, millions of these to happen, like, in a day or, like, in an hour, like, you need these enzymes to take place. These are just, like, carriers that are just making all these reactions just go by so much faster.
Exactly. So you've ever heard of, like, vitamin C? Everyone knows, okay, you know we vitamin C, but why do we really need vitamin C? Vitamin C is a cofactor in a reaction, and it's a cofactor for a lot of reactions. One of them is the production of collagen in our body, right? So all these vitamins and minerals, they bind to enzymes and allow these reactions to occur. Things like magnesium, things like calcium, things like B12, all these things are just coenzymes. So NAD and NADH are, again, just coenzymes in reaction. That's all they are. So it's really not that complicated. Just think of it as another type of vitamin or mineral. So, like, what's the key, I guess, feature of a ketogenic diet? It's the reduction of carbohydrates. So a good way to frame the benefits of the keto diet is to understand what's bad about the opposite. And the opposite of low carb would be high carb. And we talked about it a lot last week with methylglyoxal and how glycolysis is dirty. So if you want to check that out, go ahead and listen to podcast 73. That was actually really good in my opinion. But the gist of it is that the pre-processing of carbohydrates and the cytosol, which is just the soup of the cell, glycolysis, is it requires NAD. So NAD is essential for the metabolism of the glycolytic intermediate glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. And this step is very important because without NAD, this step will produce methylglyoxal. And like I said, if you want to hear about how bad methylglyoxal is, listen to last week's podcast. But to make it short, it's very toxic. It contributes to damn near every bad factor in diabetes, okay?
So just to kind of go on with that. So last week we just talked about the glyceraldehyde 3-phosphate. God, these are such big words. This is like a 30-letter word.
It really is.
It's got every letter of the alphabet in there like twice. All right, so that thing can be bad or it might not be depending. So if there's enough NAD around, it'll just get metabolized and it's not a problem. But if there's not enough NAD around, then it's going to either get converted into MG or methylglyoxal, which is very bad. Methylglyoxal is the dog with rabies that we talked about last week.
Yep.
Always dangerous. The G3P, I'm just going to shorten that, that is potentially dangerous if there's not enough NAD. So if there's NAD, it's harmless. It's going to get metabolized. But if there isn't, then it's going to get oxidized, and it's just as bad as methylglyoxal.
Yep, for sure. So that's a good point, right? That's the gist of it. So pretty much glycolysis, just the burning of carbohydrates, uses NAD and cytosol, leaving you with too much NADH and not enough NAD. Here's a quote. And again, I always link these studies on the website so you can check these out. I recommend you read them. They're very good. So, quote, continuous glycolytic throughput would tend to provoke an accumulation of NADH and lower NAD availability. Keto would decrease glycolytic NAD demand and increase NADH oxidation and NAD regeneration. So going keto, going low carb, helps regenerate NAD, which is what we want. We want high NAD and cytosol. So pretty much a carb-heavy diet produces too much NADH and not enough NAD, and this prevents a lot of proteins from doing their job. And this is pretty much the gist of today's podcast. So we're going to be focusing on a class of proteins called sirtuins, and they need NAD to do their job at all. If they don't have enough NAD, they don't do their jobs, and these proteins are very, very important. So
just to kind of clarify that, so the NAD to NADH, just like everything else in our bodies, we want that to be balanced. And if you're on a high-carb diet, going through glycolysis all the time, you're putting that balance all out of whack, and that's going to be very, very dangerous, and that's what we're going to be talking about.
Yep. What are sirtuins? So sirtuins are a family of 7 proteins that play a pivotal role in our cellular health. They are linked to the control of aging and lifespan. So pretty much these proteins are in control of how young or old our cells are. Very important. And like I said earlier, sirtuins can only function in the presence of adequate NAD. Here's a quote. NAD-dependent protein deacetylation helps maintain the juvenile phenotype, whereas inhibition by NADH or by NAD unavailability promote the onset of cellular aging and decrease organism lifespan. And quick side note, it's funny how they describe being young as juvenile phenotype. That is such like a scientific thing to do, and it bugs me. Like, I wish they could just kind of say young, you know?
Young looking is what that means.
That's what that means, yeah. But okay, sure. Pretty much high carb diets lead to NAD unavailability because it's tied up in glycolysis, right? It has to be used. Those carbs have to be burned, and that's just what it does.
Well, and it also increases the amount of NADH too. So it's not just doing one thing, it's doing two. It's a bad combo.
Exactly. Yeah, 100%. And like you said earlier, it's about those ratios. Of the 7 sirtuins in the cell, 3 of them work in the mitochondria, 3 of them work in the nucleus, and 1 of them works in the cytoplasm, each playing a variety of roles. But the basic role of sirtuins is that they remove acetyl groups from other proteins. So acetyl groups control specific reactions. So they are physical tags on proteins that other proteins recognize and will determine whether or not that protein gets acted upon. So if proteins are the departments of the cell and DNA is the CEO, the acetyl groups are the availability status. You can think of it like, you know, you have your mailbox outside. Like, if it's up, it's full. If it's down, it's empty. Is that it? I've never actually had a mailbox in my life. Is that how it is? whatever the fuck that is.
The flag on that?
Yeah, flag.
Yeah, that means if you have outgoing mail. Oh. That analogy made no sense.
You can see I've lived in like cities my whole life. I never had anything like
honestly,
that.
I'm willing to bet if you're under like 25, nobody knows what that means either.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. Yeah, so whatever that is, it's just pretty much like an on or off tag on these proteins. So if it's on there, the protein's off. If it's on it, I mean, if it's off it, the proteins are on. So that's the gist of it. So sirtuins work with acetyl groups by doing what's called deacetylation. This means they recognize that there's an acetyl group on a molecule, then remove that acetyl group, which frees up that molecule to do its job again. One way that sirtuins work is by removing acetyl groups from proteins such as histones. The histones are a large bulky protein that the DNA wraps itself around. You can think of it as almost like a protective shell around our DNA. It's very important. It's one of the... Actually, quick sidebar, super nerdy sidebar. We inherited histones from methanogens. Did you know that? I know you didn't know that.
I don't even know what the last word you said was. Okay. And I just thought it was funny. You're like a nerdy side note. Like what? A side note? A nerdy side note from what?
That's a good point. So I'm reading that book. Or I guess I'm re-listening to that book, Power, Sex, and Suicide. So you know how everybody blames cows for their methane production?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, cows are killing the environment, which is completely not true, by the way. But that's because they have bacteria in their GI tract called methanogens that break down cellulose and produce methane. And the first, I guess, creation of the eukaryotic cell was a merger between a methanogen and a kind of metabolically flexible bacteria. And so the methanogens then had histones. And so we've evolved histones since like day one, so 2 billion years from methanogens. No one cares. I think it's super interesting. I read that and I was obviously doing these notes and I was like, oh no shit. Like that's where that we've had histones for 2 billion years.
Do mitochondria play into that? Because I know like mitochondria were like thought to be their own bacteria and then like cells just kind of took them over.
That's not how it happened.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And so, actually mitochondria don't have histones.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what makes mitochondria so, I guess, precarious as far as to reactive oxygen species and free radicals. They don't have histones protecting their DNA, so they're always kind of vulnerable. And that's definitely another topic for another day. But when the histones have an acetyl group, the DNA is unwound. This means the DNA is being transcribed. Think of it as just being copied to create some product. And so DNA just codes for various proteins in our body. But in an unwound position, it's kind of unsafe. It's open to damage. So it doesn't need to be remain unwound all the time since it's vulnerable in this position. Ideally, it would only be unwound while being transcribed and then quickly wound back up around the protection of the histone proteins. So when the histones are deacetylated by sirtuins, the DNA is closed and neatly wound back together, meaning gene expression has stopped and the DNA is now protected. So let's just think about how a high-carb diet can cause a lot of damage to our DNA. So through all the reactions of glycolysis, you now have low NAD in the cytosol. Therefore, you have low sirtuin activity. So your super important DNA now remains in a dangerous position longer than it needs to. All the while, the carbohydrates are being processed in the cytosol and producing harmful byproducts, like we talked about last week, like methylglyoxal, and reactive oxygen species like free radicals that can damage DNA. So that's like a pretty bad 1-2 combo, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely.
And what makes it even worse is your DNA isn't safe in its wound up position anymore. So those reactive oxygen species have free access to your DNA and can accelerate their aging process, which is all bad.
So basically it sounds like you're at a bank and the vault door is open while the DNA is being transcribed. And the sirtuin's job is to close that vault door when it doesn't need to be open.
Yes, protect the money.
Protect the money. But if your sirtuins aren't activated and they're not allowed to basically close that vault door, everybody's money is up for grab, making it very dangerous. If you're trying to rob a bank, it'd be really easy to rob a bank if the vault door is wide open. You don't even got to worry about cracking a safe.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great example. Yeah. And through glycolysis, you're producing a lot of bank robbers. And they see that open bank and they're going to jack some shit.
And that door is just open.
Easy money.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So sirtuins don't just act on histones, they act on a bunch of different proteins. Histone is just one example, but a protein called FOXOs, which is FOXO, are responsible for the production of catalase, which is a potent antioxidant our body produces itself. And this is one of the reasons why getting antioxidants from the diet is a little flawed, because our body's really good at making its own antioxidants. But when FOXOs have an acetyl group on them, they are turned off and can't produce these antioxidants, which allows the reactive oxygen species from glycolysis to further damage the cell. So when NAD is low, sirtuins can't act on these proteins and they remain inactive, which again is a bad thing.
So going back to that bank vault, and now we're basically introducing more bank robbers and having less security guards.
Yes.
Making it very easy to rob this bank.
Just easier and easier. And the more money that's taken, the worse our health is. Yeah. You see what I mean? So here's a quote. Inactivation of FOXO suppresses the expression of PGC1-alpha, thus downregulating mitochondrial oxidative phosphorylation and antioxidant defenses. All bad. Those antioxidant defenses are very important. So to touch on that other set of proteins, so PGC1-alpha protein is the master regulator of mitochondrial biogenesis, meaning they are the signal the body uses to create more new healthy mitochondria. Sirtuins work on these as well, but only when they have access to NAD. Without it, the signal to produce new mitochondria is diminished. Here's a quote. During glycolytic conversion of glucose to pyruvate, cytosolic NAD is reduced. This would drive not only histone acetylation, but also FOXO and PGC1-alpha acetylation, inactivating these proteins. Because the sirtuin-1 deacetylase cannot use NADH as a substrate, the acetylated FOXOs and PGC1-alpha would remain inactive, thus downregulating mitochondrial biogenesis and oxidative phosphorylation, and shifting metabolism toward glycolysis. And I know that's a little dense, and oxidative phosphorylation, that's just how our body uses oxygen in our mitochondria to produce ATP. So all fat in our body is burned through oxidative phosphorylation. And that's just kind of, I guess that's a technical term for it.
Yeah, that's the ideal way that we want to be creating energy.
Not through glycolysis.
Yeah, it's cleaner and you create more energy from it. And we talk about this all the time. Like, what's our mitochondria go? Like, everything goes downhill with it. And this is just showing, like, hey, we're not able to create new mitochondria. So that just means, like, our old mitochondria are just going to get old, damaged, and just be... pretty much worthless,
and not, if not worthless, very harmful, because we're going to touch on cancer in a little bit, but dysfunctional mitochondria is one of the key triggers for cancer. And
how prevalent are mitochondria? Isn't it 10% of our body weight?
10% roughly? Of our body weight. Yeah, it's 10 million billion mitochondria.
Yeah, that's a lot.
A shit ton. Okay, it's very important, and it's funny.
Like, if you have all these processes that are making that thing worse, like, that is such a vital role.
Yeah, huge. And Steph at work, Steph, what's up? She's super cool. She's like, oh, she's about this life. She's like a critical thinker, and I love that shit. But she was like, you guys always talk about mitochondria. Like, it's all you guys talk about. And I was like, you're telling me. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, because what else is there to talk about?
It's so important.
Yeah. It all comes down to it.
Yeah. So have you finished that book, by the way?
No, I have not.
Have you started? Have you kept listening to it, at least?
Yeah, I'm trying to get through it. Okay. It's rough. It's honestly a book that I just need to, like, buy and read.
Yeah.
It's the narrator on it is just horrible.
Can't do it.
And yeah, it's already a dense enough book.
It's called Mitochondria and the Meaning of Life. Is that it? Something like that.
It's something along those lines. Yeah.
Okay. I recommend it. I think it's a real good book. But yeah, probably buy it instead of listening to it. But what this quote said, go back, rewind, and listen to it again. So, you know, when people start the ketogenic diet initially, I don't know why I start that sentence with so, because most people don't know that shit. But when you do start the ketogenic diet, most people tend to have a hard time. And that's because when they eat carbohydrates so often, like this quote said, their metabolism gets shifted toward glycolysis. A lot of these proteins needed for oxidative phosphorylation, which is the burning of fat for fuel, get turned off. So it takes a few days, a few weeks to get these proteins turned back on and to create the products they need to actually burn fat. So this is really what's going on when we have such a... You know, people start keto and they're tired in the beginning. They're not getting all this extra energy. That's because they're not good at burning fat. You know, it takes a while for these systems to all turn back on.
I mean, especially if you've been causing the damage for like 30 years.
As a heal too.
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect like your body just to switch over. You've been giving it one signal for 30 years and then you expect it to turn around in like 30 minutes. Like, no, it's going to take a little bit longer.
It's going
to
take some time.
I mean, especially if your metabolism's all messed up. like, even if you cut the carbs back, like, you know, even go zero carb one day, you still have so much extra glucose in your, like, body. Like, it's going to take a while for it to run through that.
Yeah, for sure. So there's a, I guess if you're a critical thinker out there, you're wondering, so if sirtuins are so important, you know, if they keep our cells young, if they pretty much control how old or young our cells are, why doesn't the Simply just shift more NAD to them instead of glycolysis? So this is, we talked about this, I think when we talked about high blood sugar. So the problem is similar to high blood sugar. When you have high blood sugar, you can pee it out. And that is, you know, harmful to the kidneys. But the damage is chronic and slow to the kidneys, kind of drawn out. In comparison, high blood sugar can kill you right away. So that scenario, in that scenario, peeing out the sugar is the lesser of two evils. And it's the same for sirtuins. So if there's not enough NAD for glycolysis, the amount of methylglyoxal produced skyrockets. And that stuff is immediately toxic and kills cells right away. So the damage that might be done to the DNA or the mitochondria due to the lack of NAD will happen if sirtuins aren't functioning properly, but that damage is slow and happens over time. It's chronic and not acute. So that's kind of the difference there. It's an immediate threat or a threat like, you know, in 5 years.
Yeah.
Like the body has to, you know, you're putting your body in a compromised position. It's like a rock in a hard place.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, one thing that a lot of just to kind of relate this to exercise, there's a thing called like central fatigue. Mm-hmm. And what happens with that is like when your body starts running low on glucose, your brain will force your body to shut down before it lets your glucose get so low that it's going to be life-threatening. So like that's kind of the same thing. It's like, hey, you know, just being able to stop running is not as harmful as me running out of glucose and not being able to...
Because we can die.
Yeah. Fuel my brain, fuel red blood cells, fuel all these other things. Like, let's just stop fueling the muscles.
Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, that's exactly what it is. So, it's dealing with that immediate threat. And, but, yeah, so that's what we're talking about, the NADH to NAD ratio. It's about NAD being a coenzyme for these super important proteins called sirtuins that control how young our cells are. When the sirtuins are active, they control all these proteins that make our cells live longer, happier lives. And that's what we want. We want to feel good. We want to look good. And that's what sirtuins do. They give us a juvenile phenotype, as nerdy as that shit is, but they make us young. And that's one of the huge benefits of the ketogenic diet is, honestly, something I say a lot is aging in reverse. People go keto and you're like, man, you look good. Your skin looks good. You lost 10 pounds. This is one of the aspects of the keto diet that is so beneficial and not talked about enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, I didn't really realize how important that NADH to NAD ratio really is. And that's just kind of all it comes down to is just like ketogenic diet and the intermittent fasting, just, you know, cutting back on glycolysis as much as you possibly can. And you just get so many benefits from it.
So many benefits. And yeah, you can just think of it like when the NADH to NAD ratio is out of whack, you can think of it like a vitamin deficiency. And we know how deadly those can be, you know? You're deficient in vitamin C, you get scurvy. You're deficient in D, you get rickets. Like, those are potentially fatal conditions. And you can think of NAD as the same thing. So going keto regenerates NAD. It allows a cell to use sirtuins. And I think, honestly, it's the ideal diet for everybody out there. Just plain and simple. It's just how we're supposed to eat. So I think that's it. Think we touched on it good enough?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was a really dense podcast, but at least it was short and sweet. So hopefully we didn't lose too many listeners.
It could have been way denser because the NAD works on so many other proteins. Those were just three of the big ones.
Yeah.
But all right, did you have a tip of the week?
Yeah, so my tip of the week this time, I think I probably have already talked about it in the past, but I mean, it's just fresh in my mind because it's something I do all the time, you do all the time. I feel like we got a lot of new listeners. It's the new year. Everybody's trying to lose weight. So I'm just going to use my favorite tip for losing weight. Or I hate saying losing weight. Losing fat. Because that's what we really care about. We don't really care. At least I don't care about how much I weigh. I care about how much fat I have on my body.
Yeah.
So my favorite tip is just fasted exercise. If you're new to like a low-carb diet and like new to intermittent fasting, new to exercising in a fasted state, maybe try and do this easy, like some yoga, some walking, some light jogging, something like that. But the longer you've been doing this fasted exercise, the more glycogen you'll have stored up, just the better you'll be at it. And I ran the runs I was talking about earlier, I did that in a fasted state. I talk about running 50Ks. I always start those in a fasted state. Like, it doesn't really matter. I'll do all my weight training sessions, my sprints, do all that in a fasted state. So you don't need to be fueled beforehand to be able to do that. But what that does is you don't really have that much glucose available for exercise. So you're going to be tapping into your fat for fuel. And not only are you tapping into your fat for fuel during your exercise, but it's going to be training your body to be a more efficient fat burner, which is going to help you not just during exercise, but it's going to help you at rest. Don't you want to be a more efficient fat burner 24/7? Like at all levels of exercise, all levels of activity, you want to be burning more fat. If you're burning more fat, that means you're going to be burning more fat from your body and losing fat, which is the ideal goal for most people.
100%. Yeah, that's one of the huge benefits of fasted exercise. And just think, like you said, you can be sitting down, listening to this podcast and burning more fat. And that's what we all want.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure like our ratio right now is probably like 90% fat just because we're sitting down. And exactly. Then like when we're exercising, I'm sure it's still pretty damn high compared to what we used to be like 10 years ago.
1,000%. Yeah, we've trained our bodies pretty well at this stage. But okay, that's another podcast in the books. Hope you guys liked it. If you have any questions, always feel free to reach out. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com.
Yeah, if you want to show your support for the podcast, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or YouTube. And we also have a donate button on our homepage. It's a bright yellow button. Sorry, all these big words got me all tongue-tied right now. So please share with a friend and hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.